from the novel Ash by Tiffany Johnson. Joseph kicks the ball so hard it flies over the top of my head. Boys are shouting. I run to try to intercept the ball. We've been playing the game for a long time. We just need one more point to win. I do not get the ball. Another boy from the opposing team gets there first, kicks it into the overturned trash can, acting as the goal. The boy, Aaron, pumps his fist in the air and then high-fives his teammates. Joseph stomps his foot. His face looks as though he's thinking about pummeling me for missing that shot. There are two other kids on our team. They shout out objections, then move on down the street. Joseph, I call. He doesn't even turn around to look at me, but says over his shoulder, "Get lost." "Oh, come on, don't be like that," I return. "I'm going home, and you're not going with me." "There's a new notice in the square. We're going to look at it," one of the other boys shout out. "What notice?" I ask. I tag behind a small group of friends, staying closest to Joseph, even though he's angry with me. He kicks sticks along the pavement as we walk the 5 meters to the town square. A new notice could be anything. It's probably a new regulation, a new rule for the Jews, like having to wear the yellow armband, or maybe the curfew is being changed. Joseph is laughing with Aaron. He pretends he does not know me when there are other boys around. We finally reach the town square. "There they are," I say, glancing at a small group of people who are gathered at the news board where public notices are posted. "There's a lot of commotion," Joseph mumbles, and we head toward the board. A small crowd has gathered. Some have a panicked look on their faces. Others are murmuring to themselves. Some are stone-faced and silent. We squeeze between the adults. I push my head up as far as I can, then move it to the side. I see a white notice on the board, but I can't get close enough to read it. "What does it say?" I ask, but no one answers me. "I don't know. I can't read it," Joseph says. Finally, I shoulder my way through the people and stand directly in front of the board. Staring back at me is the white official notice. "All Jewish men over the age of 18 required to present themselves at the town square Friday, October 15th, 1943 at exactly 6 p.m. Joseph and I push our way through the crowd, this time to get away. Usually full of questions, I am quiet this time. Joseph swallows. "Why?" I shrug. "Why do the Nazis do anything? Maybe there's just another rule and I need to make the men aware of it. Maybe." Papa enters my mind. In 2 days, he will have to be at that town square. If he is not, they will come find him. I do not know which is worse. I race into the house, ready to share the news with Maman and Papa, and find them at the kitchen table. Maman is crying. Papa's arm is around her shoulders. The front door closing, the kids shouting outside, it all suddenly sounds too loud. They already know. "The notice," I say softly. Papa nods. "I don't know why they want us to go, but I have to do it." I nod, my eyes sliding toward Maman. Her fingers are curled into a fist and pushed against her mouth, brown hair sliding across her forehead. She looks pale. "What if you don't go?" I ask, walking to sit beside them. But how would they know?" I ask. "They have the names of every Jew in the village. If I don't show up, they will know about it." "If they check." "But why would they check? Why make sure every single man is there?" Papa's shoulders sag. His eyes drop to the ground. "Because they can." He looks down at Maman. "I must go. But it's not the end of the world. At worst, I will be relocated to the east. They say there is work there. That wouldn't be a bad thing." Maman takes in a shaky breath. I see the fear in her face and in her hands. For the first time since reading the notice, I feel real slivers of fear race down my spine. Goosebumps dance along my arms. I don't want you to go." My voice shakes. Papa sighs heavily and then lowers himself into the chair beside Maman. He pats his knee, and even though I am too old to sit on his lap, that's what I do. "Listen to me, puppy. I have to do this. If I don't, they will come. And if they come, they might take Maman. They might take you." He pauses and then frowns. "But it isn't a problem. I will be back in an hour or two at most, I'm sure. Even if I am not, no matter what, you are not to leave this house. Do you understand?" "I want to come with you and be..." "No." Papa's voice is firm. Absolutely not. You are going to stay here. You can help your mother cook dinner. You can do your schoolwork. But you are not to go to the town square. Do you understand me? But if I don't, we won't know what happened to you. I will be back. Or I will be relocated to the east. Either way, you cannot go. What if Joseph comes with me? No, Papa almost shouts. No, you will stay here. He puts a hand on the back of my head and sighs again. It is hard, I know, but you must listen. You must do as I say. Your mother will need you here to help her if I am relocated. But if you go to the town square and they see you, they might relocate you too. But then we would be together. And who would be with Mama? We could all three go. No. The fear coils around my stomach, makes me lean down and hug him. He smells of wood, of dirt. His arms are strong around me, and I feel safe. He makes me promise I will not go to the town square. Later, in my bed, I lay with my eyes staring at the ceiling, thinking about Papa. I think about the notice and how, on the same street I live, other families are talking about it, too. Down the hall, I can hear the whispering of Maman and Papa. They are arguing about what the best thing to do is. When I close my eyes, I dream I kick the soccer ball into the goal. It is pitch black outside my window, but I cannot sleep. I've been awake for over an hour now, watching the world outside get darker and darker. I flop to my back, stare at the ceiling. There is a test in school tomorrow, geography. Since I am awake, I could study for that. It would make Papa happy for me to pass a geography test. I slide out from under the covers, open my bedroom door, and walk quietly to the kitchen. My school bag sits by the front door. I lug it over to the kitchen table and notice a package. I sit down, pulling the package closer to me. It is from America. My heart skips a beat. I open the package to find a pink shirt with a lacy collar inside, along with a newspaper article. It talks about Eleanor Roosevelt. She is the First Lady of the United States of America, President Roosevelt's wife. The shirt is a gift from America, a hand-me-down, to help in times of need. The newspaper article talks about how Eleanor Roosevelt helps people from everywhere. I examine the package and find that it is addressed to my mother. I am not sure how she managed to get free clothing for me from America, but she did, and that tells me that we are in trouble, that we need help. My heart rate beats a little faster. There is no one that can help us, except maybe for First Lady Roosevelt. Maman never asked anyone for help, except now, I guess, she has. She has asked America to send clothes for me, her daughter. Studying for the geography test is forgotten. Instead, I pull out a piece of clean paper and a pencil. I sit for a long time staring at the clock on the wall, and then I write. Dear First Lady Roosevelt, I am just a girl from Warsaw. I am not American, but I know that you are kind. You sent me a pink shirt as a gift and a newspaper article about how you help people. Maybe you will help a Jewish girl, too. When times are better here, my mother talked about the parties you have in New York City. She says that Americans love to dance. I like to dance, too, but not like most little girls. I don't like frilly dresses. I don't really like to do much of anything that most girls do. But Papa did teach me to dance. When I was 5, see, I decided I wanted to be just like Papa. I wanted to do everything he did. One day, I put on his big work boots. They were much too big for me, but I clomped around in them. I waddled back and forth like a duck. Maman laughed. She said I made a fine gosling. Papa said it looked like I was dancing and asked if he could dance with me. He didn't make me take the shoes off. He took my hands in his, held me around the waist, and waddled with me. My mom put on a record, and we waddled around the house. Papa said I was beautiful. He tucked me in when I went to bed and said it again, that I was beautiful. Papa is my prince, but he is in trouble. We all are in trouble. On Friday, Papa has to go to town square, and we don't know why. He might be relocated, move to the east. I don't know what kind of work he would do there, but I know that if he is moved, he will not be with me. We are hated here. They don't see us as people. They do not care that Papa is a prince. They do not care that he waddled, danced with me in his big work shoes. They think he is a dirty Jew. Please help us. If anyone can, you can. Thank you for the pink shirt. I will wear it every day. Yours truly, a Jewish girl. You're wearing that shirt again? You? In lace? I think this is a good thing. My poppy turning into a fine young lady. Papa was happy to see me in the same pink shirt First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt sent me this morning. I've worn it for the past 2 days straight. When Mrs. Roosevelt sends someone to help us, I will still be wearing it. And that's how she will know how thankful I am. We have to sand that edge down now, Papa says. He is helping me make a bird feeder for Mama. It is going to be her Hanukkah gift. We've been working on it for weeks, finding the right wood, sawing it to the right size, sanding it to smooth it out. We came to the basement a couple of times a week to work on it. What are you going to paint on it? Papa asks again. Every time I watch him work, he asks me the same question. Painting the box is my job, but I cannot decide. Sometimes I think I should paint it a light pink because Mama likes pink. But sometimes I think I should paint a design on it so that it will look prettier. I look down at the work table and shrug. I don't know. I want it to be special. Papa, are you worried about tonight? I ask after a moment of silence. Papa's eyes fall to the wood in his hand. The corners of his mouth are turned down. He looks like he is in deep thought. I don't think he will answer, but then he lifts his head to give a crooked grin. No, Poppy, no, I'm not worried. But your mother and I had just started dating. We went to the park one day. It was a beautiful spring day. The weather was sunny and there was not a cloud in the sky. Your mother said it was a great day to get lost. So we went to the park and began walking along the trail. It wasn't much of a path, but we followed it anyway. Your mother knew the names of all the trees. She pointed out the oak trees and the redwoods. She knew them all. He paused, his arm moving the sander back and forth against the wood in his hand. We hadn't traveled far on the path when she spotted a little blue bird on the ground. She knelt beside it and realized it was a baby bird. She thought he'd been trying to fly and fell. She gently picked him up and put him back in the nest. She wanted to wait and see if he'd try to fly again. So we found an old log that had fallen nearby and sat down on it. Sure enough, several minutes later, that bluebird jumped out of the nest again. And just as soon, he fell to the ground. I told your mother he might be injured. Is his wing okay? She returned to the bird, examined the wing, and said, No, he is healthy. She put him back in the nest. We kept watching. I was ready to pack up and head out, but your mother said, No, we had watched him too long, she said. We had to see him take flight now. I didn't think that bird was ever going to take flight. I still thought his wing was hurt. But we stayed put and watched some more. Finally, the bird jumped from the nest for the third time. This time, his wings flapped hard. Your mother was cheering that bird on as if her life depended on it. Sure enough, off he went, up into the treetops. Your mother was so excited, more than I had seen her yet. From that time on, whenever something hard came up on us, she would tell me to just remember the bluebird. She kept saying that the reason that bird learned to fly was that he had never given up hope. Papa put the saw down, leaned over to peer at me. Do you understand? We are the bluebird right now. We have to do this. I have to go, but I will not give up hope. I will believe that people will still treat each other decently. I wanted to tell him that that's not true. Only the Jews are required to wear the armband. We are the only ones who have curfews. We are the ones who are not allowed to go to school with the German children. We are not treated decently. But before I could open my mouth to remind Papa of this, I saw a bluebird in my mind. It was flying. So I said nothing. I just got up and hugged Papa. I'm going to paint a bluebird on Mama's box. Papa has warned me to stay away from the town square. I stand at the window, my hand holding the white curtain, watching him walk away from the house. I am in my pink shirt from America, and I know about the bluebird. There is hope, but there is also fear. I tell Mama I am going to play with Joseph. She tells me to come back before supper. I am not going to play with Joseph. I am going to the town square. I have to. Even though there is hope, there is also fear, and I have to know what will happen there. The evening, Fall air is chilly. I wrap my sweater around my shoulders, bend my head, and walk onward. Go home, a couple of older men say as they walk past me. I keep my head bowed, hoping they do not know me, so that they will not tell Papa or Maman that I am going to the town square. They want to keep me safe, the men and Papa, but I have to know what happens. I don't go all the way to the town square, though. I have to avoid being seen by the Nazis. They are everywhere. Their black boots slam against the ground, making it sound like thunder. They look so rich and so important with their uniforms and straight backs. What makes them scary, though, are their eyes. Some of them look at you and laugh, like you aren't capable of understanding them. Others look at you and spit, like you are their dog. I scan the crowd of men, but I don't see my father. I see a couple of neighbors I recognize, and I see Joseph's father. I turn my head from side to side, stand on my tiptoes to look around the bush, trying to find Joseph. I know he is here, too, hiding somewhere, but I can't see him. There are a lot of people here. I stand behind the tree, trying to watch, but only able to see what happens directly in front of me. The crowd is restless and the Nazis are loud. One of them stands in front of the rabbi, yelling at him. Rabbi does not answer, stands quietly and without moving. The Nazis club him in the stomach, and the rabbi falls to his knees. The Nazi yells at the rabbi to clean his boots with his beard. I can't see what the rabbi does, but he must not have obeyed because the Nazi becomes angry, clubs the rabbi in the back, and then shouts, "I said, shine my boots." When the rabbi still refuses to obey, the Nazi orders him to stand. The rabbi pushes himself to a standing position. Men are starting to gather around the rabbi, but they are afraid to step in, afraid to offer help. He moves closer to the rabbi, speaks to him in a voice too quiet for me to hear, and then clubs the rabbi again. The rabbi falls to the ground. I don't know what the Nazi said, but whatever it was, it broke his will. The rabbi uses his sacred beard to scrub the boot of the Nazi. I watch and feel my stomach churn. I don't want to say it. I don't want to think it. But I know what is going to happen at this town square meeting. A loud voice begins to shout out instructions. Every man is to lay down on the ground, on his belly, his face in the dirt. My eyes dart back and forth across the crowd. It is hard to see because everyone is moving. I do not see my father. Some of the men are reluctant to lay down. Two of them turn and speak to one of the Nazi. The Nazi pushes them down on the ground, then steps on one of the men's backs. In a matter of minutes, hundreds of men are lying on the ground, their noses in the dirt. The fact that they are in a line helps me scan them faster. I finally see my father, but he is further down the line, and I want to see him better. I push off from the tree I've been hiding behind, dart across the road and behind another tree. I am still far enough away from the square that I cannot hear what is being said, not unless it is shouted, and there are bushes that block some of the men on the ground from my view. But I can see Papa. I crouch down on my knees, peering between two bushes to watch him. My eyes are focused on him until I hear a series of pops, followed by short screams. My eyes jerk to the side, back down the lane where the Nazis are. I see blood splattered on the road and grown men crying. A man has just been shot. The fear coiled up in my stomach grows larger until there is a knot in my throat. I want to scream. I want to get up and run. I want to stop them. But I am afraid. Instead of staying on my knees, I lift my head above the bush. The movement catches my father's eye. He sees me. I know he does because his body jerks as though he's about to get up. And then he remembers he can't. His shoulders sag. He looks down at the ground, and I am sorry he knows I am here. Another pop, another scream, more blood on the street. But the man shot was not the next person in line. The Nazi had moved. There were about a dozen people between the two dead bodies. I start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Bang! I don't remember where I was in my counting, and now I have to start over. I have to know if my father will be the 12th in line. Every time the gun goes off, I lose count. I finally stop trying to find out and just stare at my father, willing him to look at me. Tears are in my eyes and my heart is breaking. Please. The Nazi is closer to my father now. I can't tell if he is going to be selected or not. All I can see is the blood running through the streets. The streets that I have played in, the streets that I have run through, the streets that I know, the streets that I love, are covered with the blood of the men and the boys who have been my childhood staples. The men who are not shot are silent. My father lifts his head, straining his neck. He is looking for me. I poke my head up above the bush, meet him in the eye. He sees me, I am sure of it. I don't see Papa's head fall to the ground because the blood covers my vision. I don't hear myself scream his name. I only know that someone is grabbing me around the waist, putting a hand over my mouth and keeping me from running. Joseph has never had such strength. I kick with all my might, but he will not let me go. He drags me farther away from my papa, behind a bush, before he finally removes his hand from my mouth. I fall to the ground, my arms flailing. I want to rush back to papa, but I can't. I know I can't. I stuff my fist into my mouth to stop from screaming and lay on the cold, cold ground.